session number 27308, Reel 5.
Well, Walsh, Reel 5. When you were escorting the convoys out to the Mid-Atlantic where the Americans took over, how many ships would be escorting a convoy normally?
Well, in that case, as you know, it was wartime. I was there in 1941, and we hadn't got... We had to just supply as many escorts as possible. In some cases, there may have been three destroyers or a couple of small ships, but mainly the destroyers or the sloops. And of course, each convoy would get what we might say would be what could be spared. So you might have two destroyers and smaller ships, or you might have three or four, depending on what could be spared. But later on, the Americans did work well with us, although they say, oh, they didn't come into the war till after this and after. They worked very well with Churchill. I mean, they lease-lended us 50 old destroyers from the First World War. And I was on one, HMS Windsor. They were B&Ws. No, they were the four stackers. I was on one of the old B&W one. Now, we had them 50, and then before they came in the war, they were building us ships, namely captain-class frigates. They were built in America for the Atlantic and for us. Now, these were fast diesel-electric frigates, and I was on one for D-Day. I went to America, I commissioned the King's Mill and the Lawford. They were two. There were somewhere around about 70 altogether that they made for us to do convoy work with. The King's Mill and the Lawford were the only two that were, we didn't know it at the time, but they were to be allocated for Gold Beach on D-Day, which was coming up.
Should we come to that later?
Okay.
What's happening? Because that's a very interesting period. When you were doing these Atlantic convoys, obviously you said there was only a few ships to escort it.
Yeah.
Were there any incidents where U-boats attacked the convoys you were escorting?
Oh, every time. As soon as you got out, you may be out a couple of day or so, and bang, in the middle of the night or in the day, you would get bang, and up would go a ship in the convoy, and no doubt about it might have been a tanker. And if that got a torpedo, well, then you definitely knew it. In that case, off would go the escorts to see if they could contact it, hoping they could contact it and destroy it, the submarine. Sometimes they got away, often they did. So, you always, and I would say that every convoy I did, we didn't ever get across without losing something. One or at least one, maybe two. In some cases, if there was a wolf pack around, they could knock off six of them at the convoy.
And what would happen once, as you say, a ship had been torpedoed? What would the action of the ship, your vessel, be? Would it go in a specific pattern, or would it?
Oh yeah. If we weren't interested in the convoy's predicament, because our job was escorting. What we had to do, as soon as one ship went up and we hadn't had a contact, the captain of the ship would say, right, he would decide where he thought that sub might be, and we'd swing off, and away we'd go looking for it, with the old Aztecs going to try and pick up an echo. And if we got an echo, we'd go in and drop depth charges on it. But other than that, we never stopped to see if we... If any oil came up or any debris, we never stopped. We just went over, dropped your depth charges, and then went back to do your job with the convoy. We didn't dash off to pick up survivors. It wasn't our job. We had to look after the convoy, which was still steaming.
Would your job then really be on board the Bulldog, really to discourage the U-boats, really rather than hunting them down at that stage of the war, to keep them away from the convoy?
Well, no, I don't think so. The U-boats were all out there waiting for a kill. And the fact that they had a couple of destroyers there didn't worry them, because they might even have a crack at the destroyers and get them out of the way. So really it was a case of hunting all the time.
When you were on board the Bulldog, were you successful against any U-boats that you know about?
No, we didn't actually pick up any survivors. We had many times we picked up Echoes, and we carried out the normal attack. But we couldn't hang around to see if anyone came up or if there was any. So we picked up our Echoes, report to the bridge, the captain would go off and drop depth charges, and then back to our job, which was escorting the convoy. So on that particular one, no. There was one occasion with Bulldog, which is renowned, but do you want me to go into that now or later?
Was that after you left the ship?
Yeah, just after. The crew that were on it were my messmates. And it was about, I left the ship in Liverpool, and it was about two convoys after. And the convoys happened about every 2 a month or whatever like that. And the Bulldog was out with Captain Cresswell. He was a four-ring captain of the ship, and he was convoying. And two ships went up. The old Breton, which was with us as an escort, which wasn't, it was a sloop or something, it wasn't a destroyer. She went, the captain of Bulldog, who was in charge of the convoy, told them to go and, go and attack, after the two ships had gone up, he told them to go in and attack. Well, obviously, they must have picked up an echo. They went in and dropped depth charges. They dropped maybe a five or two lots, you know. Anyway, they dropped depth charges, and they reported back that there was a possible kill, because they had some reason to believe that the sub had been hit. The captain of Bulldog then decided that he would ram, because the sub came to the surface. And it was some quite near, but it was there. And the usual procedure, if a sub was there and you could, was to ram it, because by ramming it would go straight down. No nonsense. So the captain of Bulldog, when the sub came to the surface, two or three or a few of the crew jumped off onto the upper deck and manned a gun. So they opened up with machine guns fire from Bulldog, which dealt with that business. They all jumped over the side and abandoned the ship. The captain then decided he'd lined up with the sub and was going to ram. But as the sub was still on the surface and there didn't seem to be any sign of anyone, because they'd all jumped over the side and were in the water, the captain thought, well, I'm not going to ram, I'm going to see what I can do here, because they had instructions that they wanted to capture the signals and codes. So this captain said, he stopped and he sent one of the sub-lieutenants on the Bulldog with a landing party of about 8 ratings. He sent the boarding party would be a telegraphist or obviously a signalman and a seaman. So 8 of them went in the ship's boat, the sea boat, to their sub. And Sub-Lieutenant Baum, who was there, he went on board. He went onto the sub and told the others to wait. He then went up on the bridge, and he had to go down through hatches, straight down. So They were up and down and narrow, so he couldn't, he had to use both hands, and he couldn't carry a revolver, although he had one. He had to go down as he was, and he wondered, was he going to get shot halfway down? But he went down, and lo and behold, he got down there, and it all seemed normal. He didn't know if there was any self-destruct stuff arranged, you know. He went down, and he looked round, and then he walked the length of the sub, and he didn't see any opposition, so he brought his men down. He brought the men down, they went down, and he said, right, get everything that's likely to be needed off and take it up on the upper deck and put it in the sea boat. So they got off lots of codes. The leading tail came to him and said, I'd like you to come and see this. And they went to the little wireless room, and there was this little typewriter machine. But when they tapped the keys, lights came up with a different number. So if they pressed down L, it came up M, lit up M. And the subdivision Bourne said, oh, that's interesting. He said, four securing bolts, four securing screws each corner. Unscrew them, take that machine up on the upper deck and put it in the sea boat, which they did. Then they got all the codes, the WhatsApps and everything else. And then, still not attacked or anything, they came up on deck. They got all this stuff, and there was loads of it, into the sea boat and back to the Bulldog, where it was stored in the wireless office. Now, the captain then had thought, I don't know, that's a... In the meantime, whilst they were on this job, while the sub-lieutenant Bourne and the boarding party were down below and on the sub, the captain of Bulldog got another submarine alert. So off he went to look at that. And when the boarding party came up, they were in the ocean on a submarine with no sign of airship or anything else other than the convoy in the distance. Anyway, within half an hour or so after, the Bulldog came back and took them on board with all their stuff, put it all in the wireless room and stored it. And the captain thought, right, I'm going to tow this submarine back to Ireland, or Scotland, Ireland would have been in. So they took the submarine in tow. This was through the night, and it went through the night. They took it in tow, and they were on their way back to Northern Ireland, or the nearest land, to take this sub in capture. But the following day, during the forenoon, the weather got worse, and it looked, and the sub started to go down. So they slipped the tow, and the sub went down. The captain then resumed back with the convoy. So that was how, I think they had a signal to go straight back to Scapa Flow, where there was a load of men from the Benchley House, the code place, were waiting. And when they saw what he had, they were really chuffed, you know. Everything they wanted was there. Those three got awarded, the DSC and the leading tail got a DSM, and the sub-lieutenant Bourne and the captain were decorated for that. But not till long after the war.
You mentioned when you were on board Bulldog, the weather conditions in the Atlantic. Can you tell me what it's like to be on a destroyer in the Atlantic?
Well, you see a lot of these films where they're... And they're quite true. The weather sometimes can be atrocious. The massive waves, and you try and go along the upper deck and you're thrown... Along the upper deck, you usually had a safety line. So if you had to go from forward to stern or anywhere, you just got hold of this line and you could hold on to that. And if waves came inboard, you were all right. You weren't swept over the side, which could happen, because the ships rolled and nearly stood on their end and went down into the seas. Oh, yeah, no doubt about that. The weather could be atrocious. And if you were under below decks, you had cooking utensils floating around all over, you tripping over them. And the best place then was what I used to do, is sling my hammock and hop up in that out of the way.
Now, I think you've got a very interesting story about how you came to leave Bulldog as well.
Well, yeah, it is, really. It's, I was on Bulldog. We've been doing this job for about a year. All these convoys and up and scapping, no leave, nothing. It wasn't worth going ashore, really. You just waited till the next one and went off. But when we were coming back on one convoy, the last convoy I was with her, we were coming back and they said, right, instead of going to Scapa, they broadcast that we were going to go to Liverpool to have a boiler clean. That meant about 5 days, what they call boiler cleaning leave. In other words, she would go in for longer than 5 days, 7 days, whatever. She'd have a boiler clean. So that gave the opportunity to give leave to a part of the ship's company. Well, we got in and it was issued that so many of the first a port or a port watch would get 5 days leave the next day after we got in. And my mate Spike Ellis and I were one of those that were going to go on this 5 days leave, and we were really looking forward to it, you know. So we came into Liverpool. Neither of us had been there before. And my mate said, well, we're on leave tomorrow. Are we going to have a run ashore? I said, yeah, we'll have a run ashore. Let's go. So off we went to have a final run ashore after all this sea time. And we got into some place called the Blue Rooms in the middle of Liverpool. And we were sat there having a few pints. Nothing much happening. And then my mate said to me, look at that crowd, those couple of blokes over in the corner there. One keeps looking at you. I said, I don't know who he is. We carried on drinking. And then this bloke got up and came over. He said, are you Ron Walsh I said, yeah, I am. Why? He said, you were on the Glasgow. I said, yeah. He said, you did a runner in Pompey. I said, yeah. He said, oh, I did a runner in Canada. He said, I was on there with you. I said, oh, no, you're Gibbons. He said, yeah. He said, I did a runner in Canada. I said, oh, did you? He said, yeah. I said, well, what are you doing now then? You're back in? He said, no, fair. He said, I'm doing fine outside. He said, oh, no, I've got a few mates here and I'm staying put. I said, oh, best of luck, like, sort of thing. And anyway, we carried on drinking. We carried on there talking and drinking, the two of us. And then before closing time, this bloke came over and he said, look, he said, how would you like to go to a nightclub? He said, you don't want to go back on board yet, it's a bit early. What about a nightclub? I said, well, it sounds good to me. So off we went to this place. I remember it now. It was 10 Hanover Street, down this street, up some concrete steps, to a door with a little peephole in, and then a few taps on the door, and then the peephole slid back, and then someone looked out, and then the door opened. We were ushered in to a big bar, and a room with a big bar, and lots of people and girls and all that lot drinking up. So we joined in. We were quite thrilled with it. Anyway, we'd been there about half an hour or so, and this Gibbons came over to us two at the bar, and he said, look, he said, how would you two like to earn a fiver each? 5 quid, you know. So we said, what are you on about? He said, if you come with us for a little thing we got to do, he said, we'll give you a fiver each. So I said, oh, all right. Well, I said to Spike, what do you think? He said, well, we're on leave tomorrow. We can do with that. Yeah. So off we he came back after a little 5 minutes. He said, right, come with us and follow us. So they goes outside. We're all going up. And they walked up Lime Street, the main part of Liverpool. And they got up so far and they came to a shop. There were people around, people going by and all this. And it came to this big shop. I don't know what it was. And he said to us, right, now, you two sailors stand in this doorway on the pavement. Don't let anyone on the pavement come in the doorway. Push them on. Okay, he said, that's all you got to do. So we stood there, and Then we heard a bang and looked round, and they were in the shop through the glass door. So we thought, oh, Christ, what we do now? Anyway, several times they came back and stuff was dumped. And then they said to us, right, now, turn round, put your arms out in front of you. And they loaded them up with fur coats. Well, what were we to do then? Oh, dear. What are we going to do with this lot, you know? And he said, right, now, what you got to do here, your two sailors, they ain't so, they won't take no notice of you. You get up to all sorts of things. So all you got to do is walk that lot down behind us. There'd be one in front, I'll be in front, and mate, it'd be behind. All you two got to do is follow us down. So we followed him all the way down Lime Street with these big pile of boxes in front of us till we got back to Hanover Street, and we're up to the club again. And in we went, and sure enough, about 5 minutes later, he came up, fiver each, and we were made fiver each on top of our other pay to go home with. And we were drinking that. By then, of course, we'd been drinking most of the evening. We were in a state where nothing really mattered. We hadn't got to worry about action stations or anything else. We were having a good time. And then over came Gibbons again, and he said, right, we're going to do another job. And we said, well, I said anyhow to him, I said, well, I don't think so. I said, we got to get back to the ship, so we'll have this drink, and I think we'll push off back to the ship. He said, no, you won't. He said, no, you won't do that. He said, because he said, if you go out this door, he said, without us, our sanction, he said, you won't get much further than the end of the street. He said, you'll be picked up in the morning or during the night. He said, you'll have had it. So you just want to do this one, and then you can go. He said, then we'll let you go. I said, oh, all right, then no use arguing. But when he pushed off, I said, well, okay, we're in this, mate. I said, but there is an answer. What we do, we'll go with them. I said, we'll follow them. When we get to this place and they pokes us in the door again, we let them get in and then we'll beat it, get a taxi and back to the ship. And we're laughing. He said, yeah, that's a good idea. He said, yeah, okay. So off we went back to, actually, we went back to the same shop, which was a rather foolish thing. But we did. We went back to the same shop. Got in the doorway. He says, right, stay there. Don't let anyone in, mind. Just stand there and don't let anyone in. They went in, and within 2 minutes, all hell broke loose. Whistles blew, cars charged up, police cars, Black Mariah hammered up. We were all still there, so we were grabbed. Anyway, they knew they'd been watching us, obviously, so they knew. We were shoved in the Black Mariah with the others. Went to the police station, and we were kept there overnight. The next morning, we had an officer from the Bulldog came to see us, and he said, look, lads, he said, you were there, you were only in Liverpool a few hours. You hadn't been before, and you find yourself in this state. He said, obviously, you had a few drinks. He said, but the point is that the police here are in the process of rounding up a gang of looters. Now, he said, they've got so many, they've now got their main base, but they're going to round them all up, and then they will go to Manchester to the assizes to be weighed off. But unfortunately, as you were there at the time, you're witnesses, and you will be required to witness when the case comes up. So therefore, you will not go back to the Bulldog. You will be called up to the courts, and they will either remand you in custody or remand you on bail. If they remand you on bail, you've got two solicitors that the Navy's employing to look after you. If they remand you on bail, you will go to HMS Eaglet, which is Liverpool's base ship for the Navy, and you will stay on there until you've got to go back again to the court. If you go back and they remand you in bail, you're remanded in custody, you will go to Walton Jail until for whatever time they say. So they said, unfortunately, this is going to take a little while, so you can stand by. So therefore, we'd lost the bulldog. She went off back to her trips. And it was the trip after that that they got the Enigma machine. But anyway, I wasn't on there then. I was languishing. They did remand us to Walton. And although we went into Walton, we were remanded. So we couldn't join with the others in the recreation rooms or anything else. We were restricted to our cell more or less 12, 24 hours a day. In other words, from half past 6 in the morning till half past 7 at night, you went back in half past 7. You were locked up. You didn't have any recreation rooms to go to. You were just in remand. So, and also you were dressed differently. You had black shorts and or something like that, you know, and a jumper. There was no the old crosses and all that lot that you get. Anyway, we languished there. We had one length of in remand, which was 7 days in there, back to the Eaglet. This went on for about another 2 weeks, and then they said they'd got them all. They were now going to Manchester for the assizes, so we were transported from Liverpool to Manchester, put in the strange ways for about 4 or 5 days, and then when the case came up, we went into the assizes, and we were all lined up in this dock with these. They'd got then about 9 or 10, I think, in dock, charged with looting, and us two in the middle in uniform, and we had our solicitors, you know. One was a woman, was Rose Hellebron, who later became the first female judge. Anyway, we were in the dock there, and in comes the judge, Justice Hallett, and he looked at, he said, right, he said, before I start this, he said, those two sailors out the dock, he said, from my point of view, they're not criminals, he said, they're heroes. Get them out the dock. So we came out the dock and we sat and watched while he gave them 9 years, 7 years, 5 years, or whatever. And then after it was over, they said to us, right, okay, we had our solicitors here, Rose Hellebron. She said, well, that's it. You've witnessed it. You're clear. So we'll go back to Liverpool, to the Eaglet, and then they will send you back to Pompey for another ship or whatever. So we went back to Eaglet, and about the next day, I think it was, we were given warrants and told to produce ourselves at Portsmouth Barracks, which we did.
Was Gibbons one of those who was charged?
Oh, yeah. I think he got about 9 years.
Was it viewed very seriously, looting in wartime?
Oh, it was. It was. Definitely it was, because after the bombing, you see, the shop's windows, plate glass windows, were smashed. They couldn't sort of replace them, so they just used to poke boarding up or anything that would stop. And that was so easy to push aside and maybe get into, or even steal from the windows, you know. So it was regarded as a big offence.